Jacqueline, I am so excited you are here. This has been a long time coming. But before we do an intro and before we hear your brilliance, I want to read something that you recently posted or something that I had read recently on Instagram. So if that's okay with you, I'm going to start here. Quote, as the founder of Create Cultivate, there is one stat that I've heard over and over again, and that is only 2% of funding goes to female-founded companies and even less for women of color-owned businesses. This is shocking, but even more shocking is the stats around women and venture capital. Only 5% of VC partners are women, a staggeringly low number. And the reality is money goes where money flows. Deal flow is a huge part of running a fund. Who you know, who knows you. This is all part of nature of doing business. When it comes to fundraising, it's crucial to have more women in power, deploying capital to founders and evening out the deal flow we see, which is why I am so thrilled to introduce At New Money Ventures, a $20 million consumer fund focused on empowering the next generation of women. Money meets mentorship. Hot dang, Jacqueline, if that is not a mission statement to leave jaws dropping. When I saw this, I was clapping you up on the other side of the internet. Like, I was just blown away. And you and I reconnected. Now, we have always touched base. We followed each other, just mutual, like high-fiving on the interwebs, just loving all the things you're doing. And then I had seen a live event for New Money Ventures. And obviously, I'm so excited. And then the shallow, petty Betty side of me was like, I wish I could have been there. I'm so sad. This looks like such an amazing event. And then lo and behold, I was like, you want to know what? I couldn't be at the event, so I'm going to DM Jacqueline. I go to DM you, and then I see an invitation to the event that, what the heck, I freaking missed. I was like, I want to punch myself in the face. I was there in spirit, but guess what? I feel like everything happens for me because I get to sit across from you at this digital table and talk. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I so appreciate that. And of course you were invited. I'm dead. Like, I wish I was there. I was like, girl, I slid into your DMs. Okay.
I know. It's totally my fault. It's totally my fault. Okay. So talk to me. Talk to me about all the good things. Talk to me about, first and foremost, I'm sure everybody and their mother knows and loves and adore you. For that 1% who's a little unfamiliar, talk about the origin story in a nutshell, the pressure points, and then why you're at this point sharing what it is you know and investing in others.
Yeah, so I'm a two-time entrepreneur. I have had two different exits with two different companies. I started my first business when I was 23, and that was a marketing and events agency here in Los Angeles. I always like to say that business was really like a masterclass in being a business owner because I made so many mistakes and learned so much through that first company. That company ended up being acquired by a strategic 7 years in. Along the same sort of timeline, I was starting Create and Cultivate as a complete side project, as like a true side hustle of just like, I want to get cool people in a room, having real conversations about business and really kind of tapping into, you know, frankly, my own selfish need as a female small business owner to kind of just be like, guys, help. Like, what are we doing? Thinking that maybe there'd be a few women that would be interested. And then lo and behold, there's hundreds of us, thousands of us, millions of us. And it blew up, took on a life of its own. And that company was called Create and Cultivate. And that company I was the CEO of for the past 10 years, which is insane to say. And that was recently acquired by private equity. I'm now the founder and vice chair of that company, still highly involved, but really excited for the next chapter of what Create and Cultivate will be. And as such, having sold companies, run companies, built companies, having also angel invested in a ton of female-owned businesses, I had unprecedented access to the problems, the issues, and the conversations that women in business we're having. And the number one conversation at Create and Cultivate was around capital. So, you know, Create and Cultivate really solved for the community and conversation issue. We brought everyone together. We had the hard-hitting conversation.
Okay, wait, time out. Yes. This is like double dutch. And I'm like, tag me in, coach. I'm ready. So for those who are listening and might be a little unfamiliar with Create and Cultivate, when Jacqueline says she put people in a room and we asked hard-hitting questions, what she didn't include is that they weren't just average rooms. This was like your really cool Instagram, life, vibe, ideas, energy, decor came to life. So you didn't walk into a stagnant hotel ballroom. You walked into a visually stunning creative area. So think of the highest ceilings, the most colorful balloon arches, the most beautiful flower displays. This event felt like a creative manifestation, so that just walking in the room alone, nobody had to say anything. You were automatically fulfilled creatively, and then the conversations came. So your body, your energy, your visual kind of started the place of flow, so that when you're asking hard-hitting questions, you're dwelling in a place of possibility, something that hasn't been done. Okay, just had to add that.
Can we add that to our website? I so appreciate it. Like, that was amazing. Was that a testimonial? No, I...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Spell my name right, girl. Spell my name right. I'll give you a bio photo.
I love it. I love it. No, that's so true. Like, it actually was, and now I feel like that's a very normal thing for a lot of these types of events, but at the time, no one was doing that. Every conference or big event you were going to was in a conference room, and conferences don't need to be held in conference rooms. They can be held in really unique, interesting venues that inspire you creatively, that feel like Pinterest come to life. And you can also have conversations about raising money for your business and be able to like mix and mingle and network. And we always like to say, at Create and Cultivate, we're there for women when she wants to do her taxes and her nails. And that's okay. Like, we are multifaceted creatures, and that's just the nature of being a modern woman in the workforce.
I love this. Okay. So we're back in the room asking the hard questions. And then what do you start? And a lot of those questions had to do with funding. And when does the seed start germinating? Like, hey, there's a gap, and I think I'm going to be part of the thing that fills it.
Yeah. So, you know, I know a lot of really amazing female venture capitalists that have spoken at Create and Cultivate and done amazing work, but I feel like I know pretty much all of them. Like, that's what's really depressing, is there's so few female VCs out there, and it's so challenging to get your fund funded, let alone fund other businesses, right? So it's this kind of like circular issue that we're dealing with. And so for me, I knew my next thing would be involving mentoring women, helping women grow their businesses, helping women also make generational wealth and really provide liquidity for themselves as they're growing and building those businesses. So I knew I had something to do with that. I was lucky enough to meet this woman. Her name's Jenny Just. She's one of the only self-made female billionaires in the United States. She's total badass. And we connected over Create and Cultivate, and, you know, had a lot of conversations and chatting, and shared that sort of same passion of supporting women specifically in finance. She was like one of the best traders on the stock floor for many years, when there literally wasn't women's restrooms on the stock floor. It's crazy. So she kind of had to battle this, you know, a crazier battle than we have. That being said, you know, we aligned on the mission, and, you know, I'm lucky enough to say that she's my only LP. So we have a $20 million fund funded exclusively by her. So we're also a rare venture capital firm, because we have a female VC and it's female led, which is extremely rare.
Okay, so there's a lot of things, a ton of things to unpack, but in light of serving the listener the best, right now, people can't move past to listen to the rest of the conversation until a couple preliminary questions are answered. And that's, you've seen, I'm sure by this point, a bunch of pitches, and you have had the luxury of investing and not investing. What makes a really good pitch? Like, what specifically, not every fund, because you are a unicorn fund. So what does this fund, what are y'all looking for? What are some like three things that if you want to pitch, you got to come correct with what?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, most funds have mandates. So they have specific things they're looking for you to fit into. Most funds have very strict mandates. Ours are a little bit looser. But basically, what we look for is the following. Is it female-led or female-founded? Number one, easy. If you check that box, great. Like, we're interested in learning more about your business. The other thing is it solving a problem in the world? Is it disrupting an industry in some way, shape, or form? Like, how are you contributing to creating solutions for people? And that could be, that doesn't have to be world changing. It can be a small little thing like in your life that you're looking to make it better. A good example is like, we have an investment called Dough, DEUX, and it's good for you cookie dough. And the reality is, like, cookie dough is delicious. It's not good for you, but they're solving this small problem of like, people love cookies. Let's make it functional and healthy, and so that they don't feel as bad eating these sort of indulgent snacks. So it really can be that simple, but like, what's the problem you're solving for? Number two. And number three and there's more than three, but number three is the founder. Like, I am big on founders. I obviously have been a founder. I know what it takes to run a business. And we really look for founders whose vision we align with, who has that sort of, je ne sais quoi about them, that you know that they're going to go to the ends of the earth for this business. They're passionate. They're aligned. They're open to feedback. That's a huge one. So really the founder is another one. And lastly, I would say the business model, it has to make money, right? Are you on a path to profitability? How are you thinking about the business in terms of, where it's going, how the revenue is increasing, how your profitability is working, whether it's your unit economics, if you're a product business or from a service business, how you're planning to scale that company. So those are the four things that we're sort of always like circling around and having those conversations. So I would say those four things.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So right now people are like, okay, I can take a deep breath. Perfect. So now that we're there, and we're going to come back and tap around these things, because I do know that a lot of like users on the inside of Social Curator, they have questions around what it looks like. But before we get there, I really want to focus, since you care so much about a founder, we care for you as the founder. You had mentioned a term in the past that I had read, financial feminism. Like, can you define that for our listeners and what it means in like the venture capital world?
Well, I think at the end of the day, financial feminism is really about giving women the tools, tips, and tricks they need to be set up for success financially. We have been in a society where the lack of opportunity and access for women, specifically in the financial category, has been unheard of in the past 30, 40 years. I mean, we've seen it in women who are studying STEM, women who, we weren't even allowed to buy a house in the 70s without our husband co-signing on it. Like, when you start to think about these things, it's actually insane how far we've come, but how far we have to go. So when I think about financial feminism, I don't think it's that money is different for women, but I think it's about actively going out and seeking the information to inform yourself on how to maximize your dollar that you're making. So whether that's investing, whether that's crypto, whether that's whatever it might be, it is part of our responsibility as women to not only educate and not gatekeep the ways we make money, but actually empower women to get out there and find the information for themselves. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, I have a very specific friend group, right? But we're all like, what are you investing in? What's going on? Like, we chat about that all the time. But when I go back to my sisters in Florida, she's like, oh yeah, like I would never ask someone that, or I wouldn't, I don't even know where to start. How do I invest? Can I be an angel investor? And so it's just about breaking down the barriers and having those conversations again with your friends, with your neighbors, not necessarily with, a VC. It can be that simple.
So for anybody who's listening and they're like, I think it's endearing and I think it's a great quality to have a fund that is funding specifically women-owned businesses. But can you explain for people who are completely outside of a world that's very normal for you, how is it different raising funds as a male or a female? How is it different for somebody of color? What was the need? And like, what were those things that we saw, that you saw again and again? And it was like, wait a minute, we can even the playing field. What were those things?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's very challenging for women, and women of color, people of color in general, to go out and raise money. It's been a very male and very pale industry for a very long time. And that's just a generational issue. Access to education, as mentioned, access to opportunity, as well as the fact that most of these funds and most people in venture capital are familial. It's like their family's been in it forever and it kind of trickles down. So that's one thing that we're up against, number one. Number two is that, as mentioned in that first opening statement, deal flow is like 99% of venture capital. And by deal flow, we mean the deals that you start seeing and that come across your desk, essentially. And while anyone can email a VC and likely pitch themselves, we all know it's sort of like getting a job, right? If you know someone at the company, you're more likely to get your resume on the top of the pile, right? So it's the same thing with venture. And so when you think about deal flow, obviously for me, being the founder of Create and Cultivate, my deal flow, all women, right? It's just by nature of the fact that that's the circle I'm in. So it's the exact same thing for white older men. their deal flow is going to be representative of what their life looks like, what their circle looks like. So when you think about it in that way, there's a major disruption that needs to happen. And part of what I do at New Money Ventures is not only fund women, but I make friends with all the OG venture firms to send them my deal flow so that I can say, just got this across my desk, because a lot of them are looking for these types of opportunities. They're just not getting them across their desk. So it's kind of disrupting the deal flow, I think, is the first thing that we need to be doing.
Oh, I love this so much, because then the Jacqueline Johnson brand of just you become a value add. You become an asset to somebody who says, like, hey, you're pre-qualifying. You're doing a lot of the heavy lifting. You are making sure that, like, you're investing in what you pass by. And now you're opening the doors for other people that you're funding. That is absolutely incredible. Okay. So when we think about these things, you are going to be doing this, and there's people right now who are listening, and they're like, okay, at what point do you know it's time to raise?
Yes, great question. So basically, it really depends on your business. And I think you have to look at a few different things. One is, does your business require capital? Meaning, is this a capital intensive business? Do you have to buy a ton of product to then be able to fulfill? Do you need to create or do research and development around a product? Like, what money do you need to get this product off the ground? And really think about that. Because the number one thing that I always tell people, not every company needs venture money. Not every company. Yeah, you can bootstrap a business. I bootstrap both my businesses. I never raise money. So it doesn't mean, like, just because it's there, you need to take it. It's really specific for a certain type of company that needs that cash to actually grow and build and even start, right? So then let's just say you're like, okay, I do need cash, that my business requires that. What is the cash going to be used for? Having a very clear, like, use of funds is what we call it. What is that going towards? Is it human capital? Is it product? Is it marketing? Really understanding and knowing where every dollar is going to go and what runway that gives you. So if I'm getting $500,000, that's going to give me 1 year of runway to build this company if I never make a dollar. And being able to quantify that in your head of, like, okay, that's kind of what I need. Once you have that number in your head, you start to put together a deck and you put together the story of your business. Why you're the right person to run this company, why this company needs to exist in the world, why you need this money, and where it's going to go to and where it's all going to flow. If you're an existing business, obviously you need to put a ton more information there of, like, your performance to date, et cetera. And then you also need to go deep into your data and analytics, right? Why is this market, you know, something that they should be investing in? You know, why is this product different than anything else? You have to know your competition, all these things. Once you're at that point, then I would pitch a ton of non-VCs. I would pitch your friends. I would pitch your family.
Oh, good.
I would pitch anyone but advice. The VC, because you need to get a ton of feedback. So have people ask you really difficult questions. Have them pick you apart. Have them say, this doesn't make sense. What does this mean? What do you think about blah, blah, blah competitor? Because those are the questions you're going to get asked. And you need to be prepared to answer all of it. Once you get through that phase and your friends and family are like, all right, we got it. You're good. You go in and you start pitching VCs and you start having those conversations. And I would start with VCs that mandate fits your business. There's literally VC funds that are just for plant-based food. There's VC funds just for beauty. There's VC funds that are very niche. If you have a niche business, go for those niche investors. You have a much higher chance of getting funded than going to someone that's more general.
Okay. I just want everybody to take a moment and, like, realize that Jacqueline she's not using her words sparingly. She's giving you a framework for what to do and what to consider. And I say this with such confidence because back in my day when Clubhouse was the thing, okay, when everyone's on lockdown and Clubhouse was just banging, I would listen to hours and hours of mock pitches. And so I'm listening to people pitch their business and then investors are sitting there and teaching them and walking them through how to make it better. So if, like, for instance, like, I'm a brown girl, I can ask my friends and family, but, like, for all intents and purposes, my friends and family they would think that my deck, whatever I showed them, they would just give me a gold star. And they're like, this is amazing. So for somebody who doesn't have access to somebody with, like, a little bit of, like, business wherewithal or chutzpah, what then do you say to that person? Like, where do they go?
I mean, go to Create and Cultivate, make a friend. Like, I think like,
I love that.
There are so many networks now that you can go to and you can literally just be like, listen, I'm pitching. At that point, everyone there probably has a deck. Be like, you run me through, I'll run you through. And let's have this conversation. Go on Clubhouse and do it. There's also a really great platform called DM, D-I-E-M. And you can go on there. It's women only, women and non-binary folks. And that's an incredible platform where people are having these real talk conversations. You can do all of that. And I think take advantage of that, because really third party, you want the harshest feedback, like up front, because you don't want to be in that pitch with your dream VC and get asked a tough question and not know what to say.
And one of the things that I hope people are really picking up on is like, Jacqueline's not telling you what to do. Jacqueline's saying like what she has done. Like, you know, there's never an excuse. Like, you're going to find a reason why you won't do it, or why you'll do it, or an excuse why you won't. So I first and foremost want to say thank you for that. And for anybody who is interested, definitely, like what Jacqueline said, create and cultivate, make a friend. DM was one thing she'd said. We'll be sure to add these to the show notes. So now, do you think, or why? I mean, we did talk about your sister in Florida, who's not necessarily talking to her friends about money. Like, why do you think it's like a taboo subject? Or why do you think the women just don't talk about money?
Yeah, I mean, we were raised that way. I think, you know, forever, it's interesting. I like saw this dumb meme today that was like, did I just move all the NASA t-shirts from the boys section to the girls section at Target? Yes, I did. And it was just this like funny joke of this guy who moved all these like t-shirts over. But I'm like, that's exactly right. From a young age, men are taught they're in charge of the household. They're in charge of the finances. Like, they're in charge of the investments. Their dad's passing down the secrets. It's starting to shift, right? I was really lucky in that my mom and dad run a small business together, and my mom was the accountant on the business. She was the financial person. So from a young age, she was like, save this, your credit score, do this. Like, she was setting us up for success from a very young age, which is rare. And I think being able to talk about how, and like, even when I was in my early 20s and had a job, you would never tell someone what your salary was. That was unheard of. So much has changed. We've seen so much progress, and obviously there's a lot more transparency, but I think it's still important to know that women, you know, one, we're getting married a lot later in life. Some our people are not opting for children, some people, whatever. And you don't have the same familial structure that was find a husband, they're going to take care of you. And like, that's going to be that. Now, women are more and more the breadwinners of their household. So not only are we working harder, making more money, doing a lot with that, we are doing it in a corporate environment for the most part, and are running small businesses. And what happens is the following. All we do is get our salary, and that's all we do. We maybe get a 401k through our company and whatever. Or if we're small business owners, we put all of our money back in the company. Those aren't necessarily bad things, but they're not going to grow your money over time. And so it's really that secret sauce of like, oh, how do I become a millionaire? Or how do I maximize my $150,000 salary to be $500,000? And it's multiple revenue streams, it's diversification, and it's investing. And those are not conversations that are just happening, right, in high school or in college or whatever. So you really have to go seek out that information. But to create that generational wealth for yourself, and whether it's your family or whoever, you have to be going outside the box of your standard 9-to-5 and or putting everything you have into your small business or venture-backed business or whatever. We tend to not take money off the table because we just want everything to go to the company and to be as successful as possible. But you need to start thinking about your own liquidity over time. It's really, really important.
So as we're sitting here and we're having this conversation, it strikes me that you have the vantage point of both sides of the table. Even though you bootstrapped both of your businesses, you've been in plenty of opportunities and around a lot of people who had pitched their decks and all of this stuff. And then if you could think of yourself in both of those ways, the business owner who faced a really like heartbreaking mess up, a mistake, whatever you want to call it. And now you on the other side of the table, if there is a business owner who has experienced something, a heartbreak, a mistake, how then do you look at, so what was that mistake that you made? And then how has it made you empathetic to other people who are like, listen, this is a really good idea. I did take a misstep. Like, how are we doing? Because the root of the question is, I know people are stopping themselves from actually not just pitching to venture, but to pitching to friends and family, angel investors, because of a mistake or a mishap. So what was that mistake? What did you learn? And then how does it make you empathetic to other people who are pitching?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. No, I mean, I definitely like, so for instance, with my first business I ran, I had like a very, I wouldn't say messy, but complicated business partner breakup. I started the company with someone and then we eventually split over like issues financially, blah, 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 whatever. It was devastating. I was very young. I think I was 25, maybe 26. We had a fast growing business. We could have never have imagined the success we had. And it was messy and complicated. And I remember thinking to myself, like, well, this is it. I've got to shut down the company. Like, I'm going to go get a 9-to-5. And really my mom coming to me and saying, this is par for the course. There are going to be ebbs and flows. There's going to be good months, bad days, good hours, bad hours. And that's just what being a business owner is you have to go with the ebbs and flows. And on top of that, I didn't want anyone to know. Like, I was like, oh my God, no one can ever find this out. Like, they're going to think I'm a bad business person. And then cut to, I started to be more comfortable talking about it. And it ends up, so many people have been in this situation. This happens all the time, apparently. And it's normal. It's normal. It happens in businesses. Businesses are complicated. Fast-growing companies make big mistakes because they can't keep up. So that was one for me that I always think, you know, it's interesting when you're pitching. Obviously, you don't want to lead with your mistakes, but it's okay to be like, yeah, I actually started this company with someone else and now we pivoted, or, you know, I brought this person on, but it wasn't the right fit, or I invested way too much into this product and it didn't work. But here's what I learned. Mm-hmm. And leaning into that part of it, of what I learned from those moments, will make you a better business person and will make you more relatable. Because I understand everyone wants to go into a pitch and be like, my business is perfect. I'm the best leader. I'm doing everything right. That's the what you think you're going into. But the number one question I ask in every single pitch is, what are you struggling with right now? And if they say nothing, red flag, red flag. Mm. Like, everyone is struggling with something, whether it's supply chain, hiring, retaining talent, whatever. So I think it's important to be able to speak about all the good things, but also be able to have a good conversation around the bad things as well.
Okay. So this led me to a game I just made up 5 seconds ago called Spill the Pitch Tea. So like, when you talk about the things you're like, oh, red flag. Like, we don't have to talk about who the pitch was done. We don't have to talk about the business, but what was something that you saw like during a pitch and you're like, oh my God, don't ever do this again.
Oh my God, there's so many, but I mean, Oh, okay.
I'm fine. I just hit my head. I literally, if you're not watching the video, I like threw my head back so fiercely, laughing so hard. I literally hit my head.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, first and foremost, I would say don't not be on video if the VC's on video. I've had people pitch where they do the call and just never, and I'm like, especially in this day and age, it's like, I need to see your face. I need to know what your like vibe is. Like, I'm not getting it from over the phone, like whatever. So I think that's number one, especially if it's set up as a video call, whatever. Good. Fine. I would also say people who, I've had a lot of people pitch, and this is just a symptom of where the market is, that are sort of like, I'm lucky to be on this call. Like, we are just oversubscribed, our blah, 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 blah. That attitude, look, good for you. That's amazing. So happy to hear it. But you never know when you're going to need more funding down the line. And being able to articulate, like, look, this round might not work out because we actually have this, but I would love to keep in touch as we grow our business, is the right attitude to have. Pitch as if you need the money every single time. Like, and if you don't and you're in that position, good for you. But I think it's important to stay humble in those moments because you never know. So I would say that's another thing. And then I would say lastly, if you have a partner or there's more than one of you on the call, one thing that's interesting and that I think actually does really well, I definitely do not expect the CEO to also be the head of marketing, the CFO, the whatever, and have all the answers, right? That's why you hire the people around you. So I actually really appreciate when CEOs have their CFO on, or, you know, their head of marketing or whatever, the people who are doing the work day in and day out, who can also help not only articulate what they're saying, but provide actual experiences, data, anecdotes around what the CEO is pitching. So I think that's a good thing. Like, definitely have your hype men, hype women on the call with you, because I think that's great. Like, you're not supposed to have all the answers. We're not investing in you. We're investing in the company, you know?
Okay. So just something a little granular here, but so somebody's pitching, would you recommend having a person on the team where your biggest pressure point is in the business? Like you had said, is it supply chain? Is it marketing or whatever? Would you recommend having somebody who's doing superior in the organization that's not related to your pressure point? Or would you prefer having somebody related to the pressure point so they could speak to that with clarity?
I think on your first pitch, you're not going to dive that much into it. If they continue the conversation, like let's do a second chat or whatever, and then they're diving into all your data, that's when you want to bring those people into the mix. But I think on your first pitch, you just want to be selling your vision, maybe have your financial person on the call if that's something that you're not personally taking care of, to be able to speak about your unit economics, your acquisition costs, things like that.
That's so good. Now, at what point in a dream world, well, not in a dream world, for you, as a personal preference, when are you looking to get compensated for your investment? Like when are those conversations, and like what's like a gauge for a business owner?
So investing is a long game. Like it is rare if you sell a company or like sell a company IPO, whatever, in 3 to 5 years. That's rare. Most companies, 7 to 10 years is the expectation or the return on your investment that you're willing to see. As VCs, you're kind of looking at a few different things. One is, as they raise over time, has the value of the company gone up? That's a success for you. So if I invest in a company at a $2 million valuation, let's say, and then they raise another round and they're at a $10 million valuation, that $10 million is a justification that the business is performing and therefore my investment has increased. So it's kind of like, it's like your investment is increasing, even though it's like still not worth anything, kind of like liquid. Yeah. You're looking at the longer term game. So increasing valuation and investment, and then also the exit at the end of the day. But look, we're seeing it happen. I mean, Way Hair Care, Jen Atkins line, I think that was maybe 5 years and that was a big acquisition. So things are speeding up because businesses can move faster, right? They have more resources, they can grow quickly. So it's interesting to see what kind of happens over time.
So for you, when you think of where you are and then your next iteration, what does that look like for you? Like, how do you know that you'll look back at New Money Ventures and say, this was the thing I set out to do? Like, what is that?
Totally. I mean, I genuinely am loving this new role for me. I'm on text message with all of our portfolio companies, constantly problem solving, connecting the dots. It's really nice to be the, you know, sort of the coach versus the player. And it's a nice place for me to be as where I'm at in my career. It's what I enjoy. It's what I like. And I have access to such incredible, smart people that I can leverage to help other people with their businesses. That's what I'm really excited about. So I've been doing a lot of that. I think also I'm definitely leaning more into philanthropy. I am doing something, and you should do this too if you're not already, but there's something called Intro. It's an app. It's called intro.co, I think is the website. And really it's a app where you can book people to chat for 15 minute increments, video chat. And I'm doing that, and all of my proceeds are going to charity. And it's been so fun, Jasmine. Like, you would love it.
I'm obsessed with this already.
It's so good. I'm going to intro you, no pun intended. But I get to chat with women doing the coolest stuff. And it's so fun. Like, I've just enjoyed it so much. I've been doing that. And then I just joined the board of a nonprofit called Half the Story, which you would also love. Basically, it's centered around the fact that influencers are always just telling half the story. So we aren't, you know... It's really like the highlight reel. We've all talked about this. And I talk a lot about founder depression, how it can be lonely at the top. And I'm very open about that type of stuff. So they're doing the research to show the effects of social media on young women specifically. And, you know, Joe Biden just announced a big project into that as well. So really working to kind of create an open conversation about the realities of running a business, of being on Instagram, of being the face of something, which I'm sure you can relate to. And the realities of, like, it's really hard. It's really, really hard. It's not all rainbows and, you know, free gifts. You know, it can be really hard.
Rainbows and swag bags. It's not all rainbows and swag bags. You know, it's totally crazy, Jacqueline. And I clearly did not have this anywhere in my notes, but when we talk about half the story. When we talk about founder depression, when we talk, it feels like a little bit that you're on your own. You know, at the time of this recording, I just got news yesterday that we were going to not have electricity in our neighborhood from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. And so I was like running around this morning early, trying to like book like a co-working site. And I'm coming here, I'm getting set up. A couple, like, you know, it's like in business, you have like drive-bys. It's like boom, boom, boom. And then you're like, oh gosh. So a drive-by this morning, very early. And I texted my husband, my business partner, and I just said, can you say a prayer for me? This is the text. I'm feeling quite isolated, like I'm free falling. My specific goal is that my heart and my brain have wings today because I feel like I'm falling. And so I just feel like I could not at all have this conversation, and we're talking about half the story, and we're talking about founder depression, and then me just being like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Because I think it's important that we're highlighting like what it means so that we do have those conversations. Jacqueline, you're a catalyst for conversations. Like, that's one thing that you have been so, so, so good at. If you can go back and tell yourself where you were when your first business, what would you say to her then? What would you say to her in the middle, in the sticky middle of create and cultivate? And then what would you say to, you know, what would your future self say to who you are right now?
Oh my God, so many things. I mean, I would say, I think the number one thing I would say to myself back then is like, resiliency required, like truly lean into being your resilient best self, because you have to keep going. And I think that's really part of it. Cause there's so many days that you're like, I can't do this anymore. Whether it's a business issue, whether you're just exhausted, like whatever those things are, like you just feel like you actually can't keep going. And the thing about being the boss is that no one's there to tell you good job. You're the one that has to tell everyone else good job. So you kind of have to be the one that tells yourself good job, keep going. Cause otherwise it's really hard to find. And then I think right now I would be like, you know, enjoy the fruits of your labor, I guess, is what I would sort of say. I think I love working and I can work myself into the ground. And sometimes I take on more than I can handle, for sure. But I think right now I'm in a place where I'm like actually enjoying the fruits of my labor, of having those years of just like grinding it out to make something happen. And now I'm just really enjoying, you know, what I'm working on.
I love that. Jacqueline, I have to say thank you for spending your time. Thank you for demystifying a part of the process. Thank you for normalizing the conversation specifically for women to have around money. For people who want to follow your journey, stay up to date, learn more, where can people go deeper with you and with everything you're doing?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at Jacqueline R. Johnson. And then you can follow New Money Ventures at New Money Ventures Co. And then I also have a podcast, Work Party, which we need to get you on. It's at.
I would love that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Jacqueline, thank you 1,000 times over. Y'all, you are listening to at Jacqueline R. Johnson on Instagram, the queen of all things investing and supporting other women. Jacqueline, you are absolutely amazing. I cannot wait to continue cheering you on. And I want to say thank you for being here. If you liked what you saw, can you just send Jacqueline a DM, or better yet, take a story, show us what you're doing or how you're listening, or just screenshot it and tag at Jacqueline R. Johnson. It is an honor and is a privilege. I look forward to continuing our relationship, and me watching from a distance as well as up close. You are the queen. Thank you, Jacqueline.
Oh, thanks, Jasmine.